but that's the old.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to make your day even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture, whether you're listening live on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 here on Saturday afternoon, or you're listening on the podcast version of the show, anywhere you get your podcast, anytime you get your podcast. You know, I mentioned News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 over terrestrial radio. There's I've just blanked, but I know there's another FM frequency that we're on as well. We're also on the TuneIn app. You can also listen on the News Radio 92.3 website. There are so many ways you could listen to this show, but for God's sake, please listen and tell your friends and tell your friends to listen and tell them to tell us that they're listening. You know, you can always email us at gopensacola@gmail.com and tell us what you think of the show, or you can just tell us to shut up and stop begging for attention. You know, that would be okay too, because you know what? That's still attention, and we love attention. Somebody else who loves attention is on the line with us. Please welcome, joining us as he does so very often, Jeremy Branch.
I'm so glad to be here. And if you are listening to this live on the radio, then perhaps you are heading out to Orange Beach for the Sand in My Boots Music Festival that's going to be taking place for the first time
Weekend. That's the not the Hangout Festival.
Apparently, Morgan Wallen purchased the, I don't know, you would know more about this stuff than I did, but this is Morgan Wallen's festival now. I'm not a big country music fan, so my kind of knee-jerk reaction is, oh, this isn't as cool. But the lineup's actually got some legit pretty good artists on it. Like, I'm pretty excited that Wiz Khalifa is going to be there. 3-6 Mafia is going to be there, which would just be an incredible show to see live. It looks like it's going to be a good time. I'm kind of curious to know whether or not we're going to have some tickets waiting for us this evening when my wife Victoria gets off work, because she books a lot of the guests that stay over at the hotel that she works at. Last year, we got tickets to hang out for the last year, and we didn't go. I've been regretting it ever since. So if we get tickets, we may just see you out there. We record a little bit early, so we'll see how it goes. I'll report back. What have you seen anything about the festival, Julio?
I mean, I honestly had kind of put it out of my mind. I'm disappointed that Hangout is no longer a thing, at least under the name. I mean, I guess this is kind of, I think some of the same people are still involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Hangout really kind of morphed over the years, went through, you know, several kind of identity changes over the years. I mean, it started out with, you know, kind of a diverse but slightly jam-oriented vibe in the early years.
As many festivals were back in the day,
And then it started going more EDM, more hip-hop, more pop. You know, we were talking about a festival that's had everybody headline it from, you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and Stevie Wonder and Paul Simon to Lana Del Rey and I'm trying to think of
Doja
some of
Cat.
Doja Cat, you know. So it's gone through some identity changes over the years for sure. I mean, that brand was I thought a good brand. You still have the Hangout restaurant right there on the beach in Gulf Shores.
Yeah.
And I got to admit, you know, some of that is me having a little bit of nostalgia for it, because when the festival started, I was the entertainment editor at the Pensacola News Journal, and we, you know, we covered that in depth. We basically, you know, set up on the beach for 3-4 days and 4 days really with the preview nights and everything. And it was kind of a signature part of what I did at the News Journal, I think, was our coverage of that, leading into our similar coverage of DeLuna Fest for the 3 years that ran, which we won a couple of awards for. So the risk of tooting my own horn, I think that for some reason we always chose to enter the DeLuna Fest coverage, but the DeLuna Fest coverage wouldn't have existed without the Hangout Fest coverage. That was where we really developed what worked and what led to that. And I mean, Hangout is undeniably what worked more so than DeLunaFest did, and that it went on for a decade, I think it was, maybe a little more than a decade versus 3 years of DeLunaFest.
And man, those were a special couple of years for Pensacola Beach. I've been to a lot of festivals, and I'm sure you have as well, but there's just nothing like a beach music festival here on the Gulf Coast. You got the white sandy beaches and the emerald green water, and everybody's there to have a good time. And it sure does beat the real muddy fairgrounds and other places where you'll often see festivals. I think it must be expensive, though, as well. Those guys that were running DeLunaFest were some great people, and it was unfortunate to see that go away, but I'm glad that we got to experience it when we did.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely tell you it's not cheap to do that kind of thing, and maybe this, you know, trying to rebrand around a big name like Morgan Wallen makes some sense commercially, and you know, it is kind of a weird lineup still, because while you've got a good amount of country on this, and there's been country on the Hangout bill before. I mean, even going back to year one, Zac Brown Band was one of the headliners year one, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and over the years they'd had country headliners here and there, country acts here and there. But it is kind of like you've got your Morgan Wallen, your Brooks and Dunn, things like that. But you've also got, you know, you mentioned some hip hop. You mentioned 3-6 Mafia, Wiz Khalifa, T-Pain. Post Malone kind of straddles a lot of different genres, but Post Malone's one of the headliners here. And you still got EDM on here. You got people like Diplo, who's been at Hangout many times.
Yeah, he's so, kind of a mainstay.
And you still have some like indie rock type stuff too, because like the War on Drugs is on the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So it is still, even though it kind of looks on the surface like a country rebrand, there's a lot of other stuff here. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's two things. It's one is, what do you feel about the loss of the brand? And two, I mean, there's a little bit of, what do you feel about Morgan Wallen in there too? Because, you know, he is not an uncontroversial person, to be certain.
That's valid.
You know, he's had his issues. I will note that the Hangout Music Fest website still exists and is not auto-forwarding to Sand on the Beach, or whatever it's called. Sand in My Boots, whatever. What is it? Sand on My Boots?
Sand in My Boots,
yeah. It's a terrible name, too. it just is. It just is. There's nothing about Sand in My Boots sounds good. Hanging
sand
out
in my
sounds
anywhere.
Good.
Yeah, good point.
Hanging out sounds good. Sand in My Boots sounds like, I got to take my boots off and shake all the sand out of them, because this is irritating.
It sounds like one of the pull cord things that Woody from Toy Story would. There's sand in my boots.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do regret the end of the brand, even though I hadn't been a couple years. And I think also, in fairness, I think COVID didn't help.
No, it didn't help much.
Especially because they had, the year that COVID happened, they had what was easily their best bill ever in terms of commercial appeal lined up, and they had sold out the festival within a couple of days, and they had to cancel the thing. I mean, they had Billie Eilish at the absolute apex of her popularity lined up to be a headliner, and then they had to cancel it, and they never did re-sign her. So, and I mean, Billie Eilish would still be huge, obviously, but this was when like the Billie hype was at its hardest.
Yep.
You know, it was just this absolute like perfect storm. It was Billie and I don't even remember. The Chili Peppers were on that bill, but there were a couple other like acts that it was like, well, Lana Del Rey was one of them who they did eventually get back. And Juice WRLD, who ended up passing away.
Yeah.
They had Megan Thee Stallion like down the bill, because this was fairly early and she wouldn't have been like a headliner yet. But yeah, it was this, you know, this really intense bill that they ended up losing and never getting back. And I think that, like a lot of things, COVID killed a lot of momentum for a lot of things, and I think Hangout was one of them. And I don't know that it ever recovered from that. And I will admit, I hadn't been in a couple of years myself, but you know, I do have a place in my heart for it. And we'll see if sand in our boots or sand in your bathing suit or whatever it's called gains that heart for people in this area. But we'll see. We've got to take a break. You listen to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. is Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we thought that we would, since we were talking about the There's a Snake in My Boot festival on Orange Beach. Now, it's the Sand in My Boots festival. I'm going to get this name right eventually. Sand in My Boots festival. That we play one of the bands that's on the bill. That's the War on Drugs with Red Eyes. Great song, great band, actually. That would be like one of the top ones that I would want to see if I was going to this festival. Even though I said this is not for me, like the Sunday afternoon bill on the Dangerous stage, I'm kind of down with the War on Drugs and Future Islands and like those bands a lot. Let's move on from that, though. We wanted to talk about a bunch of news that's come out from our friends at our friends at Warner Brothers, which it's kind of a weird thing in general. Like sometimes Jeremy, we talk about this a lot. Sometimes it seems like Warner Brothers can't get out of its own way.
Like you were so excited to talk about this on one of the shows that we recorded, and I got secondhand excitement over this particular story. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The David Zaslav machine just keeps on churning out the terrible decisions after another, but it's not all bad. And I think that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, like as much as we get down and like they just do this stuff that makes it impossible not to make fun of them. And that's where we're going to start because that's, I think the biggest news that came out this week was news about their streaming service. You may remember when David Zaslav came in as the CEO or whatever, mm-hmm. The head of the entire conglomerate, Warner Brothers Discovery. When Warner Brothers and Discovery merged and they put Zaslav in charge of everything, he came over from Discovery. One of the first decisions he made was that he was going to rebrand their streaming service. They launched this streaming service called HBO Max, put a lot of money into promoting this service. They were tying to this platinum brand of HBO, which has over the course of several decades become this imprimatur of quality. Deservedly mm-hmm. so. I mean, like still Sunday nights on HBO are the prestige night for anything.
Best television on TV.
Yeah. It's not TV. It's HBO.
Remember
that used
that's
to be,
true.
That used to be their brand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they put out this service and they were having some success with it. And the first thing that David Zaslav did when he came in was take the HBO brand off of it and change it to just Max. And so, yeah, and fair, you know, HBO's sister channel was always Cinemax. So Max, there's still like a brand in there. But I mean, let's be honest, those of us who grew up in the 80s, nobody ever called it Cinemax, and definitely nobody called it Max.
what did they call it?
We called it Skinemax.
Yeah,
because it was known for running a lot of low grade, R rated movies that you were pretty much guaranteed to see boobs in.
Softcore is what the kind of genre was referred to. They would have stuff like I don't know, Passions or Taxi Cab Confessions was actually an HBO one, but it would be like stuff starring David Duchovny,
yeah,
like
in
Red
fairness,
Shoe Diaries.
Yeah, in fairness, some of that stuff was on HBO. In fairness, HBO showed a fair amount of those movies too. But Cinemax like had the imprimatur on that. Like it was like that was where you went to see boobs before the internet existed.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you actually sprung for the Playboy Channel or something like that. It's probably where every 12-year-old boy saw his first boobs.
Of a certain age.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the even prior to that.
But let me finish the thought real quick, and then we'll do that.
Yeah.
So the big news this week is that they're rebranding the streaming service again. It's no longer going to be Max. It's going to be HBO Max.
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't laugh out loud when you heard that. Have you even been alive on this planet? Why did you do that? Why didn't you just leave it alone if that's what you were going to do? Like we've even seen like videos drop out this over the past couple of days of stars and creative people involved in HBO Max programming, recording promos, and they've basically just released the behind the scenes of them. Wait, we're calling HBO Max again? Are you serious?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, James Gunn and John Cena both had Peacemaker Peacemaker promos that they were filming, and they released the behind the scenes like on their official media streams. Like, are you kidding me? Really?
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I mean, which is totally on brand for both of them and for Peacemaker, but that's neither here nor there. So go ahead, backtrack, Jeremy. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please. We needed to get that out.
Yeah, we needed to get that out there.
So the HBO brand is strong, and that's such a fortunate thing. And it seems like the theme of this show up to now and for the next little bit is going to be about branding, because it is so important. And Warner Brothers has a very tangled web in its relationship with HBO. But this all started a long time ago, and under the leadership of who kind of was responsible for continuing that legacy of the golden age of television, starting with Sopranos all the way through. His name was Richard Plepler. And back in 2010, he was pretty forward-thinking, and he created HBO Go, or the people on his team created HBO Go. That was the TV service. It was when TV service subscribers could watch the shows on demand, which was a great idea. So you got HBO Go out there.
Yep. That's how I watched Game of Thrones initially.
In 2015, they created HBO Now. So all of a sudden, it's getting a little bit convoluted here, right? We've got HBO Go that ran concurrently with HBO Now. And what HBO Now was also really cool. Now all of a sudden, you don't need the TV subscription. You can just watch the streaming service and get a lot of the HBO content on it. Cool idea. Maybe they should have made it a subcategory of HBO Go. I'm not exactly sure. But in 2019, Richard Plepler stepped down. And I think I even remember having conversations, and maybe you can weigh in on, like, people were concerned about the future of HBO because he was so pivotal in greenlighting, at, like you said, Game of Thrones. I've mentioned The Sopranos. We had The Wire. We had Entourage. Just so many really good shows. Boardwalk Empire. So, like, I remember in 2019 being like, oh no, does this mean that the future of HBO is kind of now in ruins?
Yeah. I mean,
do you remember that?
I do. I just can't get over, like I said, this is one of these places where I feel like they just can't get out of their own way, though.
So in 2020, they launched HBO Max, and you kind of touched on it already. HBO Max, it's a hybrid of taking the programming from Cinemax, mixing it with the programming of HBO. It was officially launched right around the pandemic. And then in 2023, and this 2020 is when it all kind of started to go crazy, because I remember even you and I having conversations. HBO Max, really? Not the prestige that HBO has, but okay. And then in 2023, so over 2 years ago, Zaslav completely hacks off the HBO part of the brand. And like you said, Max was a waning IP at the time anyways, but it's not even as if it was even attached to Max anymore, which is where the original name came from.
Does Cinemax even exist anymore?
No. So exactly. And that's just another weird thing. And so, that brings us up to now, where he brought back the HBO name to HBO Max. And a quote from Warner Brothers Discovery, and this is just some really good jargon right here. They said, returning the HBO brand into HBO Max will further drive the service forward and amplify the uniqueness that subscribers can expect from the offering. It's also a testament to WBD's willingness to keep boldly iterating its strategy and approach, leaning heavily on consumer data and insights to best position itself for success. So for me, and then I'll pass it back over to you, this wasn't the wrong move. The thing they did before was the wrong move. Right. Going back to the right thing, it was the right move, but it's one thing after another.
Yeah, it just sounds ridiculous. Like, they spent all this money on rebranding. They fixed something that wasn't broke.
Yes.
And then they went back and fixed it to where it was not fixed before. And, let me just to add on to that, when they launched this service, they not only it was not only a portal for HBO and Warner Brothers material, they went out and they bought a lot of other programming, but they did original programming. They folded the DC Universe streaming service into there. So anything that had been on that streaming service, unfortunately, you lost the comic side. You can still subscribe to just the comics because you got DC Universe had both programming and comics on it. You can still subscribe to that comic service, but they lost all of the video content.
Yeah.
They brought all that over, and the one legacy we still have of that is the Harley Quinn animated series, which started on DC Universe and is now still continuing on HBO Max. I think they're going to do another season of that. At least I certainly hope so, because I really love that show. But they licensed South Park, which they're now about to lose.
For $500 million,
yeah.
They got a couple of TV movies out of it, which were great.
No, they didn't get those movies. Those movies went straight to Paramount Plus, which is part of the whole thing. That whole thing with South Park, we could talk about that some more later, but that's one of the big issues that Warner Brothers has going on right now is that this lawsuit with Paramount over South Park. So,
and then they also folded in all of the slop Discovery stuff, not Discovery Channel from when you and I were younger and it was actually like quality stuff. I'm talking about like My 600-Pound Life and Stars Vegas and all of this garbage that nobody goes to HBO or HBO Max or Max or whatever to watch. So it's just like they've diluted the brand.
Yeah, they licensed Doctor Who and then Disney grabbed it from them. And they've still got some of the back catalog, but Disney's got the new episodes.
Interesting.
It's a whole thing. We'll talk about this some more. We've got to take a break to listen. Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. We're going to continue playing artists that are appearing this weekend at the Sand in My Boots Festival. I'm going to stop making fun of the name of it.
Look at you nailing it, man.
Even though it's still a terrible name, I'm going to stop making fun of it. That's Future Islands with Seasons Waiting on You. Man, that's a great song, and I just depressed myself when I played it, and it came up as being 11 years old. Like that still feels like
back hair is older than that.
That feels like a new song to me, and it's 11 years old, and it's like, dude,
where does the time go, young people?
I know, man, I know. But we're gonna get back on topic here. We're talking about everything that's going on at Warner Brothers and the rebrand of the stupid rebrand of HBO Max to Max back to HBO Max. It's the right decision made several years too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, in fairness,
the way that they're trying to position it as if it's like cutting edge or that they're like really giving the consumer what they all of a sudden want is very, PR jargon, right?
Who else?
We were yelling at them not to do that.
You know who else rebranded several times like this?
Who's that?
And had stupid reasons for it every time? And is somebody you really don't want to be compared to right now?
Uh-oh.
Sean Combs.
You just diddied us on Let's Go Pensacola.
remember, you know, he was Puff Daddy, and then he was P Daddy, and he's P Diddy, and then the P was getting in between him and his fans, which really, if you know what's going on in the world right now, is a statement. And he just became Diddy.
Yeah, to your point.
And now it's more like Diddy commit several instances of sex trafficking and sexual assault. And the answer seems to be yes.
Yeah.
Seems to be. Allegedly. He has not been convicted yet, so I've got to put all those words in there. I don't want to put David Zaslav in the same bin with with Sean Combs, but
the boot fits.
I don't know where I'm going with that. it's
crazy, though.
It's just one of those stupid things. It's like this stupid thing of this killing movies for tax write-offs to the extent that, okay, maybe this Batgirl movie they were working on didn't work out because it wasn't going to fit into the plans of where they were going forward.
Maybe it sucked,
whatever. Sure. You had a completed Scooby-Doo movie that you could have put out there.
And we're seeing that the Coyote versus Acme was well received, as well as the other one that came out.
And they were going to kill that too. They killed a Looney Tunes movie that this same company, Ketchup Entertainment, bought and was able to successfully theatrically release, and they're getting out there. So, I mean, again, we're talking about a company that doesn't know what to do with Bugs Bunny, one of the most iconic characters in the history of all media. He should be to Warner Brothers what Mickey Mouse is to Disney, and they don't know what to do with him. So
with these multi-winged corporations, I think it gets a little bit more complicated. Where like Netflix is Netflix. Warner Brothers owns HBO, but Warner Brothers also operates outside of just HBO.
Oh, sure. And they've got Discovery, and they've got DC Films, and they've got, you know, there's all these little sub, but so does Disney. And Disney is better at branding.
Yes. But it also, it's like, and this is something I don't know when you want to delve into it, but on top of some obvious, glaring, just big, fat mistakes where it's like, what are they doing? They're also responsible for some great television. They're also responsible for some commercially and critically successful films that are coming out. So, like,
yeah, that's
the thing. Is it a project-by-project basis?
That's the contrast here, because we've been piling on here for a little bit, but and it's like this thing of, you know, they're the gang that couldn't shoot straight. But they're shooting straight, and they're not. I don't think, in fairness, they're getting enough credit for it right now. Right now, they're killing it at the box office. You know, they had this 1-2 punch of Minecraft, which is coming up on $500 million. You know, insane. Then Sinners, this huge critically acclaimed movie, best movie of the year easily, and that's making all kinds of bank. To the extent that I'm actually surprised that Disney dropped a trailer for Ironheart this weekend, and I'm surprised it didn't say from the creator of Sinners on it. Did say from the creator of Black Panther, which, okay, whatever. And then this new Final Destination movie came out this week, Final Destination Bloodlines, which is blowing away the returns on any previous Final Destination movie and getting the best reviews of the franchise. 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I got to tell you, Jeremy, I saw this movie. It's a good movie.
I'm very excited. I was stoked to hear that you say that you liked it, because oftentimes nowadays the audiences that get to see the movies early are always the most enthusiastic. And I feel like if anything is pre-screened, it's going to start with like a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It didn't used to be that way. These days it's a lot less discerning, but I do think the trailers were really good. It kind of sets you up for the mood of the show, the movie. I'm actually going to be going to see it soon. When you said that it was good, I was like, awesome. I'm actually looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, without getting into any details, this movie is hugely entertaining. It does what it says on the tin. You know, it's a very much a Final Destination movie, but there's no fat on the bone in this movie. It is everything that's in this movie is there for a reason. Even if you think it's not, even if you think it's extraneous and throwaway, it's not. It is so.
Were you not worried? Like when you were going into it, you mentioned to me, like, I hadn't seen all these other movies. I don't know if I'm going to know what the heck's going on. Did it feel like it mattered?
I mean, I could tell there were one or two things that were references to the franchise, but it didn't get in my way of enjoying the
awesome.
Thing. is that, you know, there were one or two things that I was like, oh, that must be a reference to a previous film. But it focused on this family that is the focus of the current movie and not any preceding characters. The only returning character that we actually see on screen is, of course, Tony Todd, who's been in every one of these movies, playing William Bloodworth.
And as far as I know, his final role, so that's definitely a reason to go out and see it.
His final on-screen role, there's a couple of voice acting parts that are still floating around out there that haven't been released yet. But and his final scene is just like not just a farewell to this character, but it feels like a farewell to Tony Todd himself. He has this he has this great speech that, like, if this movie had come out earlier, they would have used it as his clip in the In Memoriam and in the Oscars. It is just so perfectly tailored. And, you know, he had to know he was sick already at that time.
Yeah, you know, I hate to be gross, but you can tell by the, you know, his frame is different than it was. So there was obviously a little bit of writing on the wall.
Well, and the character, even, and without giving anything away, the character is also sick.
Okay. So, well, that's exciting. I got to ask, like, what's the sauce? Like, is it that, so you talked about the movie side of it, because like you said, right now they are just pulling all aces.
So, but let's look at HBO again, you know, the crown jewel, Last of Us, The White Lotus.
Mm-hmm. White Lotus is so good.
House of the Dragon. Mm-hmm. You know, which there may be some differing opinions on the quality of House of the Dragon. I don't see how anybody doesn't think that it's great, but it is. But I think it's great.
I mean, and the Penguin,
was amazing.
The rehearsal,
The Penguin was amazing and is winning awards. You know, all of these things are winning awards. They're getting audience. Sunday night on HBO is still a prestige time slot.
The brand is strong. That's, you know, one thing for sure, that despite all of the kind of hiccups they've had along the way, the brand is strong, and that Sunday spot
has consistently been good. Even looking at commercial television, if you're talking about like straight up broadcast television, this is the company that continues to mine the Big Bang Theory successfully, mm-hmm. despite the fact that the Big Bang Theory itself has been off the air for several years, aside from the fact that it's still a huge show in syndication. And, you know, they had the successful Young Sheldon spinoff that ran for several years. They ended that last year, and they've spun off another series, Georgie and Mandy's first marriage, that is the number one sitcom on TV right now. And they're getting ready to do another spinoff. The first one that's going to be contemporaneous to The Big Bang Theory, where they're spinning off Kevin Sussman's character, Stuart, the comic shop owner, into his own show, bringing in a couple of the, you know, the secondary players from Big Bang Theory to be part of that show. You know, you can't tell me that's not going to, at least at the start, be successful. It may or may not be creatively successful, but people are going to watch that show at the start for sure.
So there's a journalistic adage. I'm sure you probably are more familiar with the quote, but like, why is it that the bad news tends to be so much more prevalent and kind of bury all of the successes? Is there something that kind of speaks like bad news travels something? And I don't know exactly, but I guess what I'm wondering is, like, it's not just us talking about this. It seems like the narrative is never how much Warner Brothers is killing it, and it's always how bad David Zaslav is killing the brand, even though the brand seems to be pretty strong.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Certain things you just can't refuse. She wanna ride like a cruise. I stuck by ya. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much, or you'd be left in the dust. Unless I stuck by ya. You're the sunflower. You're the sunflower.
Every time I'm News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Jeremy Branch is on the line with us. If you got to see Post Malone last night on the stage at the Sand in My Boots Festival, more power to you. I hope he played that song because that's a great song, Sunflower from Into the Spider-Verse. So it's weird that we're kind of playing a song so intimately associated with a Sony property when we're talking about Warner Brothers, but, you know, it's the way things happen. We are talking about Warner Brothers, and to answer the question that Jeremy posed before the break about why we seem to focus on the bad news out of Warner Brothers rather than the good news, and note that Warner Brothers is killing it. The answer is because we live on the internet.
It's fun,
and that's what the internet does.
Yeah,
it does not help when you have people out there like the Snyder Bros who just automatically want to hate on everything that's not from their guy, which that again falls into Warner Brothers. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. You know, the internet lives to hate.
Yeah,
and that creeps out into the real world. That being said, I don't think that we've been unfair in our criticism. I think we just need to make sure that when they're doing things right, we're saying that too.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think that's exactly it. We're willing and have the time to dedicate a little bit of that time to actually acknowledging the things that both of us were really big fans of. And Warner Brothers has a history of and a legacy of just, you know, really, really good content peppered in with some crazy branding stuff that ultimately it doesn't affect our lives all that much. What does is the entertainment that comes out of it. And, you know, you mentioned Sinners because it's in the box office right now. Another film both of us really liked is on HBO Max, and that's Companion. So, like, they really do have a pretty good catalog of stuff over on HBO Max. So we'll keep an eye on that. I'm counting down the days till they just become HBO again. We'll see if that happens in the next 2 years, but in the meantime, we got some other stuff to discuss
I don't think they're going to ever rebrand the streaming service as just HBO. I actually think that would be a bad move. But yeah, you're right. I didn't realize that Companion was it was New Line, so that's Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, the two best movies of the year are Warner Brothers movies.
Yep.
So I kind of alluded to this briefly. But it feels like there are two big gambles going on at Warner Brothers right now that are going to really be some of the biggest drivers of the future of the company.
Yeah.
At least creatively and commercially. One is the DC slate, which really hinges on Superman, which is coming out in just 8 weeks, July 11th.
While we're on the topic of Superman, and before we switch to the other, let's dive into this a little bit more, because I got to ask you what you think. Is Superman the determining factor for the fate of the DC universe? Meaning, if it does poorly, do all plans get scrapped? Do they say, well, at least we have Supergirl coming out? I mean, how important is this to the future of DC?
There's no way a Supergirl film succeeds if the Superman film doesn't succeed.
Right.
That it's that simple. So I think if this movie just outright bombs, it spells disaster.
Yeah.
At least for the DC film side, I don't know how you recover from that. I don't think it necessarily has to make $1 billion. I think they've kept the budget down. I think people keep throwing that number around like, well, if it doesn't make $1 billion, it's a failure. Not necessarily, because they didn't spend, you know, $350 million to make this thing. So, you know, that's kind of the rule of thumb. A film has to make three times
an arbitrary number. As not the armchair experts, what is the number that Superman needs to hit to be a success in your mind?
So a film has to make basically three times its budget during its box office run to be considered profitable. So they spent somewhere between $150 to $200 million to make this movie. So let's...
Is that what you think?
That's what the public numbers are out there on the budget.
Okay.
I actually Googled it. So $600 million worldwide, I think, is successful. I think anything over that is gravy.
To your point, the people are going to look... when I say the people, the commentators online, the... Even journalists are guilty of it. If it doesn't hit $1 billion, it's going to be framed as a failure, even though that is not true. And if that's not what they're projecting and not what they're expecting, it's definitely not true. But does that stigma have a negative impact regardless?
I mean, you can say that, but I don't think that measure of success is realistic anymore. I think that since the pandemic, there haven't been a whole lot of movies that hit that figure. And I think the last one that did was Barbie. And who made Barbie? Oh, that's right. It was Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Good call.
So, I mean, you know, I just pulled up a list.
I think there's only 60 movies ever that have hit $1 billion. So not only
53.
53 movies that have hit $1 billion.
According to the list I'm looking at, 53, and I'm just double checking here to see if there's anything newer than Barbie on that list. I do see a few films from 2019, which was the last year before COVID.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I actually am wondering if that list that I'm looking at is old because I don't see Barbie on it. Yeah, that one I was looking at was old. So we're actually at 59 films.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. I was hoping my 60 was pretty close to right.
Moana 2, in fairness. Moana 2 did make $1 billion worldwide.
Okay.
So that would be the most recent one. Yeah, Avatar Way of Water was only a few years ago. That was... And then there's a Chinese film called Niza 2, which actually did pretty well in the States as well, but obviously made most of its money overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, so not a lot since the pandemic, though. Again, we're talking about, what, four movies, three movies, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Barbie was 23. Yeah, so, yeah. So I don't think that is a realistic level of you must make this much to be considered successful anymore.
No, I don't either.
I think it's always been dependent on the budget. If the budget is,
yeah,
you know, if the budget is 350, 400 million, then yeah, you got to make $1 billion. If if the budget is 100 million, then you got to make $300 million.
Yeah. If the new Conjuring movie made $1 billion, that would be a whole other crazy situation.
Yeah, like, because the profitability would be off the charts, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why it's always, you know, you see like this movie, a movie that, you know, was made for, you know, $10 million and goes on to make $100 million, and they treat it like it's the biggest blockbuster of all time because the profitability is off the charts. So,
I think a movie that has a big chance of hitting $1 billion would be the new Jurassic movie, regardless of quality. They tend to always hit $1 billion, so we'll see.
We'll see. So, yeah, a lot weighs on Superman. Superman is basically the future of the entire DC franchise. So
Jurassic is Warner Brothers, by the way. Throw that out there.
Is it?
No, it's Universal.
Yeah,
My bad.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, so that the future of that franchise hangs on this movie, hangs on James Gunn, hangs on overcoming the Snyder Bros that are hating this out of hand without seeing it because it's not Zack Snyder.
Yeah, they really moved the needle.
I'm not that worried about
that.
Again, this is a vocal minority on the internet. Whatever. The other big gamble is this Harry Potter series on HBO.
Big gamble.
They are, you know, taking a beloved franchise that may or may not have its own issues with the creator of the franchise having unendeared herself to a lot of people. That's the nicest way I can say that.
Yeah, it is.
So it's got that to overcome. It's got to overcome these beloved movies, many of which made more than $1 billion worldwide. Eight films and at least five of them cleared more than $1 billion worldwide. that are not that old, that still play well. They're still on TV all the time. They hold up. There's not a real need.
Epic Universe Park that's opening.
Yeah, there's not a real need to remake this other than to make money. And they can make all the noise they want about, oh, we're going to be more loyal to the books, and that's the fans of the books really want a more loyal adaptation. And that may be true, but you can't, in one hand, tell me that you're making a more loyal version of this. And I am not one that has any issue with race swapping a character, but there's a very specific description of Snape in the books that the actor that they cast does not match. And that's a problem. It's a problem that you're going to make all of the heroes look like racists.
Yeah.
and it's a problem that this character was affiliated with the actual equivalent of racists in that world. So, you know, it's a huge gamble. And unfortunately, we don't have time to get more in depth into it because we are out of time. We'll see what happens. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.